Hi, this is Rod Faulkner, and you are listening to the 7thMatrix.com Eye on Sci-Fi podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 43 of the 7thMatrix.com Eye on Sci-Fi podcast, the podcast where we share with you terrific indie, science fiction, and fantasy online short films and web series, as well as interviews with fascinating filmmakers and other creatives. Thanks for listening. This episode features our conversation with visionary sci-fi director and filmmaker Sydney Hugh. Sydney is based in New York City, and she came to our attention via her compelling sci-fi short film, Odessa. Odessa is about an astronaut's final night on Earth before she embarks on a multi-year interstellar mission. Sydney also discusses her forthcoming sci-fi short film, Ovum, which is an award-winning Black Mirror-esque short on what may happen to our reproductive rights should technology and political policy continue on its current trajectory. Throughout her commercial career, Sydney has developed films and content for numerous prestigious brands and businesses, including NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratories, Condé Nast, Wired, United Airlines, Scholastic, Imagine Science, Open Road Media, and many more. Sydney was very kind to take time out of her extremely busy schedule to stop by the podcast to discuss her sci-fi shorts, Odessa and Ovum, as well as her filmmaking influences, why she created her nonprofit, the New York City Women's Filmmakers Group, and more. So enjoy the Eye on Sci-Fi podcast interview with sci-fi director and filmmaker Sydney Hugh. Sydney, good morning and welcome to the Eye on Sci-Fi podcast.
Thank you, Rod. Thank you for having me.
Oh, listen, it is a thrill. And we are here to discuss your new sci-fi short film, Ovum. And you were kind enough to give me preview access, and I saw it, and I was just blown away by it. And it really touched me, too. It resonated. But for the benefit of our listeners, and we're not going to get into spoiler territory, of course, but can you share what the premise of Ovum is?
Sure. Ovum is sort of a mini Black Mirror episode on what would happen in the near future for women if VR and reproductive rights converge.
Okay. And your cast was terrific, including Michelle Beck, who played the protagonist. What was the casting process like for you with this project?
It was really important for me to cast, and so I did it pretty much on my own. I led the casting process, and I started with the family. I started with the protagonist, Rosalyn, and sort of went from there, had open casting calls, saw a lot of different wonderful, amazing, talented actors who all had their own take on it. But when I met Michelle, I just felt a connection and knew that she was the right one to play Rosalyn. And then from there, I hosted chemistry reads with potential male leads with Michelle, and Ryan was the clear front winner. And then once I had my pair, I started to build out their family one at a time, sort of asking for references from all over New York City, asking my friends who were involved in teaching kids on Broadway or volunteering in programs that fostered young talent. And then,
oh, nice.
Of course, having casting sessions as well. And it was very, very, it's actually much easier than I thought it would be. I gave myself a lot of time because I thought it's going to be really difficult to cast, you know, a lineup of five kids who are all supposed to look similarly and also be the children of Michelle and Ryan. But it actually came together pretty smoothly. And I was really pleasantly surprised by that. I think it's because also, you know, you'd be surprised at how much multicultural talent there is. And
right.
When given a chance, they really just like, they're there. You just have to, you know, look for them and give them that opportunity. The toughest part was really casting the infant, and I, you know, went to extraordinary lengths and unfortunately still couldn't find an infant that fit what I was looking for. I was even resorted to sort of like scouting around my neighborhood. I was not above that, actually. I would just kind of peek into people's strollers while I'm like walking my dog, you know, sort of give them my business card.
Oh, that's too funny.
Here as like non-threatening and normal as possible. Tell them I was, you know, I promise I'm a filmmaker. I'm trying to make this film. I would love it if you call me. And nobody ever calls me back, unfortunately. I wouldn't recommend that method in terms of casting children. But luckily, during one of the sessions, one of the actors who actually came to read for the other parts, he and his partner brought their lovely, lovely baby. And she was just a dream to work with. I'd never met a child who was so well behaved. And so she got the part.
A bit of serendipity there.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was. it worked out great. So, and I'm really grateful for the amazing talent I was able to find for this project. They make the project.
Well, I concur, because watching it, they really seem to be a real family. And of course, everyone was terrific, but Michelle really did give a tour de force performance in it. She was wonderful. I just wanted to ask, what inspired the premise of Ovum?
Yeah, that's a great question. And at around 2016, early 2016, I got a few friends of mine together to form an informal sci-fi collective. We were all sci-fi directors working in the genre and workshopping each other's scripts and hopefully making a short each at the end of it. And right. I had written a script about designer babies at the time that I was ready to shoot and working on. But then the 2016 election happened, and I just felt really compelled from all the news I was seeing about, you know, the ways that different states were putting restrictions on reproductive rights, for instance, the fetal heartbeat bill or the mandatory fetus burials and the mandatory sonograms, the heartbeat bill, basically where they force anyone who's going in to get an abortion to listen to the heartbeat of their fetus. Just things like that. I just felt compelled to change my story and write something that was relevant for the times.
Why do you feel that science fiction is so well suited to hold up a mirror and examine a lot of the societal and political issues that we grapple with?
I mean, it's what science fiction is made for. It's, you know, it's
agreed.
The only genre where you can, you know, basically peek into the future or provide people glimpses of futures to strive for or to avoid. There is just no better genre. It is, yeah. I mean, I'm very biased, but I really do truly believe that.
Well, you know, definitely with you mentioned Black Mirror, and of course, even as far back as Star Trek, the original series on film, you're right. Science fiction just has a really effective way of just holding up a mirror to all of the issues that we tend to grapple with in real life. And also, too, science fiction often can be pretty prescient as far as predicting the technology that we come to take for granted in our everyday life, including Ovum deals with a piece of that technology. I won't quite give that away. But in your other film, Odessa, which we also watched and covered on the 7thmatrix.com, you also tackle exoplanets and the realities of what interstellar travel will take. Could you, for our audience, kind of go over what Odessa is about?
Yeah, absolutely. Odessa is about an astronaut last night on New York City before she goes on a mission for 135 years to discover a planet with life.
It was filmed in New York, correct?
Yes, it was.
It was definitely another character in the movie. And what I love about your work is that you take some pretty, sometimes heady sci-fi topics, but you're able to tell really beautiful human stories. And what I got from Odessa was that it really shows the power of human connection. And I also love the little call out that you gave to the Wizard of Oz as well. I thought that was really neat. Is the Wizard of Oz one of your favorites?
It is not actually, but I do love it for sort of the place it has in our cultural history. And thank you for spotting that. For me, the reason why I have to tell human stories is because that is always free. And science fiction, as you guys know, is very, very expensive and usually requires a huge budget to pull off sort of the imaginary worlds that you hope to build. And so with budget constraints, and also I was in New York at the time, Odessa was in the writing really kind of bore out of the creative constraints and budget constraints that I had. So, you know, rather than fight the fact that I didn't have money to leave New York, I thought, well, let's make New York the character. And then how do I tell a story about, you know, an astronaut in New York, and sort of went from there. And then same thing with Ovum and pretty much a lot of the stories I'm writing now. You know, of course, one day, and the dream is to write those stories that take place in intergalactic civilizations and to send everyone 5,000 years into the future with me. But until I'm there, you know, it's always about human connection.
Who were some of your filmmaking influences?
Absolutely. So my favorite science fiction films and TV shows, it's always going to be The Masterpiece by Stanley Kubrick, 2001, A Space Odyssey. It stands on its own. It's a work of art, in my opinion, more than it is a film. And then I love Gattaca. I think Gattaca is such an incredible film that explores the bioethics of what we do in a way that I don't see a lot of science fiction films exploring them nowadays, although I have seen the trend to go more towards the exploration of, you know, why should we use technology? What can technology be used for? What are the ways that we can use technology to oppress and connect? So I'm loving that sort of trend, but it wasn't like that for quite some time. And Gattaca sort of plays that trail for me. And then I also love 12 Monkeys. I love Blade Runner, obviously, for the incredible world building. And then Firefly is just the gold standard in building such compelling characters that you would go to the ends of the galaxy with them.
Ah, your fellow brown coat. I loved Firefly.
Absolutely. Yeah,
I was so mad when that got canceled. I still haven't gotten over it. And it's like, come on, Rod, it's been over a decade, but still, it was just so good.
So good. Yeah, and I don't think we'll ever get over it, you know?
Yeah. It was really a wonderful piece of work. And at least we got a major motion picture out of it, but still, I'm a little still salty about that one. But Sydney, you also mentioned too about exploration and also the cutting edge of science. And I also have a note here. I wanted to ask you about your web series, Cyborg Nation, that you created, and it features scientists that are on the cutting edge, and it garnered over 1 million views, which is pretty extraordinary. So could you also describe what Cyborg Nation is about?
Absolutely. Cyborg Nation is a web series that I co-directed with Elizabeth Orne, which interviews scientists from across the United States on, like you said, cutting edge technologies that seek to merge the human body with next level computing and technologies. Yeah. It's okay. A really wonderful series if you're interested in what is happening right now, that, you know, brain-computer interfaces, synthetic, you know, touch sensors, fingertips, even hacking cockroaches to help rescue missions in, you know, disasters. It kind of runs a gamut of all the really amazing emerging technologies that are happening that could one day, you know, be in your closet. There's an exoskeleton episode that, you know, could helps now paraplegics walk again. So it's not even science fiction anymore. It's real stuff. And that's what I love too. Like, I love the real stuff.
Yeah, I would agree. It's like we're living in tomorrow right now.
Exactly. Yeah. And for me, like, for my science fiction stories, I always say that I'm really interested in the hard sciences and science fiction stories that are grounded in our reality, because I think it just gives them that much more link to our real world, and it also could maybe teach us something. And my own personal fascination with technology and science, of course, bleeds into all my stories.
Well, speaking of stories, I also wanted to touch on the terrific organization that you founded in 2015, NYC Women Filmmakers, and it has over 4,000 members in its community. So could you explain exactly what your organization does and what its mission is?
Absolutely. Man, Rod, you really did your homework.
I try to be prepared.
I greatly appreciate that. So NYC Women Filmmakers was started from really just a desire that I had at the time to meet more women in the film industry. I was working at a commercial production company, and I felt like I wasn't meeting enough women. And if I relied on just going on set and meeting that occasional one other or two other women, that it would take me forever to meet a community of women that I wanted to work with. And so I decided to host a little like get together. I ordered a few pizza pies, and that first time, like 20 women showed up, half of them I didn't even know who they were. Wow. And one of them actually worked on Ovum.
Oh, fantastic.
And so, yeah. And so from there, all the women were saying, like, you know, we would love to do this again. So I thought, okay, why not? And I did it again the next month and the next month and the next month. And it sort of snowballed from there. We started hosting workshops. We thought, you know, this would, because I was the one leading them the whole time. And I thought, you know what, that all these other women have so much knowledge and experience to share with the larger community. So started bringing in presenters to come in and talk about their expertise. And so now we host monthly workshops. We're a bona fide nonprofit 501c3 organization. We have, as you said, you know, over 4,000 members, very active members on our Facebook group. We have some other stuff in the works. And it's not just me. I have a team of women who volunteer their time to help run this community. And it's been such an incredible experience for me, thinking back to that very first pizza party that I had in October 2015, to the many connections and projects and collaborations that have come out of it. I'm just really honored that I got to be a part of it.
Oh, it sounds wonderful, Sydney. And, you know, in light of the Me Too and Time's Up movement, which I personally hope is a permanent sea change in the way that businesses is conducted, not just in filmmaking, but everywhere in every industry. But for you, being a filmmaker in New York, how has the Me Too Time's Up movement affected your career, or have you seen any impact of it?
I think what has changed since Me Too is that the conversations are finally happening. Before Me Too, we all knew what was going on. We all knew that it was extremely imbalanced, that a few were hoarding all the power, and then they were also holding it over other people and using it to, you know, terrible means. But I think there was a way that the patriarchal system designed it so that if you spoke up about the subject matter, you were ostracized and your career could suffer from it. And so a lot of people were afraid to speak up. But now with the movement that is so vital to the world, really, in supporting the other half of the entire world and population, the conversations are happening. Some doors are opening. I think it's a little bit too early to say that, you know, there's been impact made on me and the New York film industry as a whole. But I do hope that the momentum that we gain from this continues on and doesn't fizzle out like it has been with several feminist movements in the past. And that hope is, I definitely have that hope. While Ovum doesn't necessarily have that hope, Ovum is sort of a continuation of where we are right now in society, but we don't progress. I made that film in hoping that we see that and are like, you know what, let's do something about this.
Right. And like you said, it's important not to let this movement fizzle out, but to continue to keep the conversations and the momentum going.
Absolutely.
As far as Ovum, I know that it's not available right now to the public. Is it entering the film festival circuit this year?
Yeah, so it's been actually on the festival circuit for quite some time, and I am planning on releasing it soon, just thinking about when and what's the right avenue for it. But it will be definitely available for people to watch soon.
Okay, great. We're definitely looking forward to that, I can assure you. So I've got one more pretty heady question for you, and that is for fledgling filmmakers, especially young women and young women of color who are beginning their careers or they're thinking about entering into filmmaking, what is one key piece of advice that you would impart to them?
Oh, this one's actually really easy. Okay. There is, if you're looking to become a filmmaker, there is nothing better that you can do than writing and making your own stories.
You know, excellent.
When you write, when you make your own content, you are owning that. That is your IP. That is your creative. No one can take that from you. And if you can negotiate with that, you just are a much stronger creator. And at the same time, too, don't wait for permission from other people. Don't let external forces, other naysayers, to stop you from telling your own stories. You know, no one can tell the stories that you have. You are your own unique voice. You are valid, and you should go forth and do that, and don't wait for someone to let you do it.
That is wonderful advice, really is, especially for anyone, but particularly for many of us who are members of marginalized communities, to go ahead and just do it.
Thank you. And then can I add something to that as well?
Certainly.
So with when you say marginalized communities, I want to bring up that with OVM, because I was in charge, I was self-funding it, that I was able to sort of determine how I hired. And it was really important for me to support women and people of color with behind the scenes as well as in front of the camera. So that is something that you guys at home have the power to do when you are leading your projects. You can be the change that you want to see in the world. You know, you can hire what you think reflects the world, and you can hire based on how you want the industry to move towards. So I highly encourage that, you know, give women the option to lead. They will always give their 150%. Trust me, that is just how they've been raised. And yeah, you know, just be inclusive, because it's so much better when you hear from a lot of different perspectives. It just makes the work that much stronger.
Definitely in total agreement here, Sydney. And where can our listeners go online to follow you and your work and your next projects?
They can find me on my website, sydneyhue.com, which is spelled CIDNUYHUE. And then they could also find me on any of the social media platforms at sydhue.com. Oh, not .com. At sydhue. So that's CIDHUE. Yeah, come follow me, engage with me. That's what social media is for. As creators, we love it when people respond to our work and want to talk about our work. That's why we made the work. So don't be shy. Reach out if something spoke out to you, not just to me, to any creator that you value the work from.
And I would definitely post a link to your website in the show notes of this episode. And I didn't even touch the tip of the iceberg of her work. She's very prolific and her work is fascinating. It is so wonderfully made and really has a lot to say. And also too, we will be on the lookout for OVM when it comes out, and when it does make its public debut, we'll definitely cover it here on the 7thmetrics.com. So Sydney, thank you so much for stopping by the podcast to speak with us.
Thank you, Rod.
And there you have it, our conversation with sci-fi director and filmmaker Sydney Hue. I want to send special thanks to Melinda Fox over at the Coven Film Festival for facilitating our introduction to Sydney and her work. A link to Sydney's website, where you can follow her and her latest projects, will be included in the show notes of this episode. Just visit the7thmetrics.com and navigate to podcast, or use the direct link, the7thmetrics.com/EOSF podcast, to not only access the show notes of this episode, but an archive of show notes from all of our previous episodes as well. Hey everyone, Rod Faulkner here, and before I sign off, I needed to ask your help. Ever since the 7thmetrics.com came online in 2013, we have been sharing terrific indie science fiction and fantasy online short films and web series on the site ad-free. However, in order to continue our work, we need your help. If you would, please visit the7thmetrics.com/support in order to learn all of the ways in which you can help us continue to do the work that we do. You can make a donation via our PayPal button, become a monthly supporter via Gumroad, or purchase our science fiction and fantasy short film guide that contains over 30 hours of outstanding indie science fiction and fantasy short films. Or you can choose to support one of the Eye on Sci-Fi podcast sponsors. But either way, your support is vital to us, and we thank you. And that concludes another episode of the 7th Matrix Eye on Sci-Fi podcast. Thanks again for listening, and remember to subscribe to us via our RSS feed, on iTunes, or wherever you found us. And please leave us a review on iTunes as well. That really helps others find us, and I really appreciate it. Make sure to head over to the7thmatrix.com to discover a wealth of independent science fiction and fantasy content that we have collected there. Sign up for our newsletter so that you will receive our latest discoveries directly into your inbox. So until next episode, everyone, remember to take a break, escape the mundane, and enter the fantastic. Take care.